This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, I'm sure you don't need reminding that there are a lot of bad things about climate change, undeniably. But there are some upsides too. And one of them is the ability to produce delicious wine right here in Hertfordshire. Hannah is a local farmer who farms land on the banks of the River Mimram at Locklebury Farm near Welwyn. She and her family made the bold decision to turn part of their land from farming arable crops into a vineyard. So is their decision paying off? Is it easy to swap arable crops for vines? And will the Mimram Valley be the new Loire Valley? Let's hear from Hannah to find out. I started by asking Hannah where the idea to start a vineyard had come from and whether the changing climate was a factor in that decision.
Absolutely, Amanda. Thanks so much for having me on. Climate change has been imperative in our decision making towards moving towards a vineyard. Even in Hertfordshire, a lot of people are surprised. Hertfordshire, I've not heard of many vineyards, but we are in an absolutely ideal location given the way that the climate is moving. We're in a very warm, dry area, something which the vines really enjoy. And so one of the key sort of reasons we went to crop diversification, as we call it, was because of climate. We also are seeing a real growth in this sector that is mainly due to the climate, but even the growth of the sector itself was for us a really good reason to diversify in this matter. We knew we wanted to diversify anyway, so we knew we wanted to continue growing. We are farmers, we're producers, that's in our DNA. And so trying to find a crop that was better suited meant we turned towards vineyards. So that's kind of why we felt it was a great idea, and certainly climate was front and centre behind that decision.
And when did you decide to make the change? How long have you had your vineyard now?
So the vineyard was planted in 2022, but this was something that had been considered by my parents for decades. And really, it was about waiting for the right moment in terms of market, in terms of industry, so making sure we had winemakers, wineries, viticulturalists, etc. But also the climate was quite different 20 years ago to where it is today. So it's been a sort of long process, but really it was sort of 2020 during COVID that we really started to get the ball rolling with our vineyard.
And I just wondered, how do you even start to learn about what it's like planting a vineyard or looking after a vineyard? I mean, presumably this is really very different to growing your arable crops like you've been used to.
Absolutely. Viticulture is a totally different kettle of fish. We're dealing with permanent crops all of a sudden. So usually we're rotating our crops annually most of the time, sometimes even multiple crops in one year if we're having a catch crop or a cover crop. So to have a crop which should be in the ground for 40 years or more is a very different kettle of fish. And also just the nature of the vine growing year is very different. Normally in winter, we would be leaving our crops to grow, whereas in winter, we're actually pruning in the vineyard. So some really key parts of our year have suddenly turned to field work rather than during that time we might usually be doing maintenance on the farm, forestry, that sort of thing. So in terms of learning about how to be viticulturalist, that's been quite an interesting journey. We've gone on lots of courses, learning as we go along, having some really fantastic consultants from Vinescapes who've helped us get from zero to vineyard, and you know, just learning on the job. But definitely helps having a sense of how to grow a crop, but really it has been a big learning curve.
Yes, indeed. I love that, from zero to vineyard. That's a great idea. And as you say, this is a very different kind of crop. Presumably, you're not in the first year able to take grapes from your vines, or certainly not in the quantity you'd hope to be able to eventually. So presumably this is a sort of a long-term financial opportunity. How does that work with your farm? Do you have to find somebody who wants to invest in it, or what do you do about the financing of a project like this?
So with vineyards and really with a lot of agriculture, we're used to really long-term investment. We know that even with our arable crops, we plant wheat in the ground and we don't know what return we'll get on our investment until sometimes a year's time. So there is an element, a huge element of risk in agriculture. And ironically, with the vineyard, we feel that we're actually curbing that risk, because even though it is a 5 to 7 year sort of turnaround, sometimes even longer in terms of return on investment, we feel that because it's a very potentially profitable cash crop, and there is the kind of added addition of being able to create a direct-to-consumer product, which we can set the price of rather than just taking a price that's dictated to us. That's how we mitigate the risk that may be presented by a long-term investment. So don't get me wrong, there are lots of sacrifices that have to be made in order to make such an investment, because we're basically running on then very low cash flow for 7 years, which to most economists may sound, or even business owners may sound, crazy. But I think as farmers, we're used to having to be very resilient in sort of those terms. And also we've really, really been careful about costing out our business plan. And so we always had that long-term strategy in mind. So I think it's not for the faint-hearted, but we've really considered that in how we've approached the business going forward.
Yes, indeed. And well, like you say, you're taking a risk every time you put a crop in the ground, aren't you? So
absolutely.
In some ways, it's very much what you're used to. Now, we're here on Environment Matters. And of course, we're interested in food production, but also interested in nature. And I just wondered whether you'd been able to find opportunities to incorporate a bit of wildlife in your vineyards, and how that compared to your arable crops.
Absolutely. So, of course, without biodiversity, without the habitats, without our environment around us, we wouldn't farm. So as farmers, it's absolutely front and centre of our job to look after our environment. And in the vineyard, that's been no different. I'm always careful to use the word regenerative, because I think it's very easy to put big labels on things. But for the purpose of my explanation, we are farming regeneratively in the vineyard. So minimum cultivations, and really just allowing our soils to speak and do a lot of the work for us. We're using techniques such as gentle pruning, for example, to really encourage vine resilience. And in terms of nature in the vineyard, we planted biocorridors. So in every other row of the vineyard, we have clover mixes to try and encourage insect interaction. Also, we didn't want it to be a sort of nature-free zone, because vines are generally self-pollinating. So there is a danger there that it becomes a bit of a blank spot. And that's something we really wanted to avoid. So that's why we're trying to really encourage the clover growth. Around the sides of the vineyard, we have put in new hedging, which should be coming on in the next 2 to 5 years. And that's part of a wider scheme where we're trying to link up corridors, nature corridors, as it were, all the way across the farm, because we have some amazing woodland habitats. We have some scrubland. We have some of the Mimram Chalk River as well, a very important habitat, which we've got a reed bed project on the go there at the moment. So the vineyard is sort of almost a micro example of the broader environment and nature schemes we have going on the farm. And indeed, right beside the vineyard, our arable is currently part of the sustainable farming incentive. So that at the moment is in wild bird seed and legume mixes to try and encourage soil regeneration, but also to keep all of our various species, particularly endangered ones, wild nesting birds, happy as well. So yeah, the vineyard is kind of a micro example of what's going on a much larger scale.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. It sounds like a lovely place where you're surrounded with nature because of all the great things that you've done there. So you've had the vineyard going for a few years now. I just wondered how it was going. Is it like you thought it would be? Is it going well?
Yes, it's going fantastically, really. I think we didn't know truly how it would turn out. We'd had a lot of advice, and we were very scientifically driven, data driven, in terms of, you know, the actual crop and everything. So we expected good results, otherwise we wouldn't have planted. But really, we've been overwhelmed by the success of the young plants. They've come on really well. We had a harvest already in the second growing year, which was a year earlier than expected. And that was not from forcing the vines at all. If anything, we sort of considered dropping all the fruit, but there was so much that we were advised to actually try and harvest that energy to encourage regrowth. So really, really thrilled with that. As a result of a very warm year this year, we've actually been able to produce a still wine much earlier than expected. So we'll actually have our first ever wine, which is very exciting, in 2026, which will be a still rosé. So we've also been overwhelmed by support, both locally and further afield. And that's been really encouraging. I think as farmers, it's easy to become quite isolated. And the vineyard's done a fantastic job of offering a product which is obviously exciting and niche, but opening new conversations about farming and the environment. And I think that's been really fantastic.
Yeah, well, this all sounds like great news for wine drinkers in Hertfordshire. It really does. So you've grown these wonderful grapes. Do you then make the wine on your farm?
So we don't make the wine here, mainly because we wanted to focus on really understanding our growing, the viticulture first. And we were concerned that if we brought in a winery as well, we'd have just a bit too much to learn at once. So we have an extremely capable and fantastic winemaker called Harry, and he is down at The Grange, which is in Hampshire. And they are also a family concern, which has grown, and they now have this fantastic winery. And so what we do is we're very hands-on with the winemaking. So we by no means sort of ship off the grapes and then it comes back in a bottle sort of thing. We work side by side with Harry and his excellent team. And so when it comes to blending, we go down to the winery, we work on all the blends together. Any sort of winemaking decisions we chat through, whether that be malolactic fermentation or understanding what's happening with each fraction of the grape pressings. And that's something, you know, we talked about learning and understanding how to grow grapes. Well, this is almost the next part of that learning train. So really, really enjoying that. And we are really obsessed with the detail. And one of our biggest USPs, as it were, at Locklebury is that we prioritise nature-led winemaking. So we're not interested in necessarily making the same wine every year, the same non-vintages. We want to really showcase whatever is possible in that year. And this really goes back to working with our environment, because it's very easy to get stuck in a trap of everyone likes this wine, so we've got to keep trying to make that wine. We're not going to be doing that. We're going to be saying, well, this year was really hot, so we were able to make a still rosé. That's fantastic. Last year was quite cool and wet, so we're going to make hopefully a really outstanding sparkling wine from that. So every year will be different and there will be never-ending winemaking opportunities. So working with Harry and The Grange has been really amazing to kind of explore that.
That sounds absolutely fantastic. And it would never have occurred to me that the same vineyard would be producing sparkling wine one year or still rosé the next year. So my goodness, I've learned something. I imagine you've learned an awful lot. Yes. So it sounds like we can't buy your wonderful wine this year, but when will we be able to buy it and where will we be able to buy it from?
Well, once the wine is ready, we will bring it back to the vineyard, and we hope to be able to do some events where everyone can pop up to the vineyard, try the wine and buy the wine on site. So one of the sort of buying options will be from the cellar door, as it were. And we're also going to be online. So we already have a website, but we'll be attaching a lovely online shop there as well. And also looking forward into the future, we've had great interaction with local businesses that are really keen to promote farm to fork products. So hopefully local eateries and farm shops, but certainly to start with, it will be direct from us. And we're really looking forward to sort of sharing that moment. It will be hugely exciting for us. And I know lots of people are asking about the first wine. And we're looking around summer 2026. So sort of June, July time from there onwards.
Marvellous. Well, that sounds, that would be the perfect time to be enjoying a nice glass of still rosé, won't it, in summer 2026? So that sounds definitely something to look forward to. Do you know, Hannah, that does sound like an amazing project that you have got going there. It really does. And it sounds like one that's got a really exciting future ahead of it. So brilliant that you've been able to talk to us about it today. And well, we're looking forward in the future to hearing about all the other great things going on at Locklebury Farm. Thank you so much for telling us about that today.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
I was talking there to Hannah, farmer at Locklebury Vineyard. So I wondered if you tried growing things for yourself that might not have been possible without climate warming. I know that my fig tree didn't just have one crop of figs on it this year, but some of the later crop that would normally stay green and hard did in fact this year ripen and turn that beautiful purple colour. Perhaps you've tried growing crops like sweet potatoes or watermelons, or perhaps you even grow grapes yourself and you've had a go at turning them into wine. I'd love to hear about your climate warming enabled produce. You can get in touch with me and tell me all about it. Via email, I'm on amanda.yorworth@mix926.com or look for Environment Matters on Mix92.6 on X and on Facebook. And if you're looking for other positive stories about the local environment, then do head to the podcast page of mix926.com, where you'll find the podcast of the show where we hear about the Chalkstream River that's undergone the biggest renovation project of its kind that Hertfordshire has ever seen, to make it better for a myriad of wildlife, as well as more resilient to flooding and drought. And in last week's podcast, we heard about the careful transition of an old St Albans golf course into a haven for nature and people to connect. Actually, a particular favourite of mine is the conversation that I had with Anna Addison of Sustainable South West Hearts about the new repair cafe that she'd helped set up. And it just exuded community spirit, just a lovely can-do mentality and a real joy in learning together. Do take a listen. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.